I'll talk about, here's the plan of my talk. I'll talk about, first give a very brief review of gap phases of matter and how relation to topological quantum field theory, very brief, because actually pretty much all I said also already showed up in talks by other people, in fact, in the same notation. So, and then I'll discuss the distinction between fermionic and bosonic phases. And then I'll discuss how one can construct topological field theory describing fermionic phases in 1+1 dimensions. And that is one space, one time. In the future, by the way, we're going to use this capital D to denote space-time dimension. So called capital D instead of little d, because little d is saying could be space and capital D space-time. So I hope this won't create any confusion. And then I'll say very briefly, we'll mention how this can be extended into three-dimensional, well, 2+1 dimensional phases. Now, the references are, well, this paper by Zheng Cheng and Shougang, and our work, which sort of elaborated on their construction. And there's also all the work by various authors, like Gu Wang and Wen, and Petkovsky-Kitaev, and Chen Guwen, which also appear, but they won't explicitly point it out. Okay, let me start with a brief review of gap phases of matter. So there are, you know, the phases of matter we learn about in grade school or elementary school, same thing, like solid or liquid or gas. Or, but you know, once we go to university, we find that actually liquid and gas are not really distinct phases of matter because it can be continuously connected without any phase transition. On the other hand, there are different kinds of solids, which are distinguished by the symmetries. Now, the most, all these phases, well, the most basic question you can ask about each of these phases at low temperature is whether there is an energy gap. That is the gap, non-zero gap in this energy in the spectrum of the Hamiltonian between the ground state and the first excited state. So in the limit of a large volume of the system. Well, if this gap is non-zero, even for an infinite system, then the phase is called gapped. And actually most phases are gapless. So the being gapped is pretty unusual. So from the point of view of condensed matter physics, but so they're all kind of exotic, but nevertheless, well, so here is some gapless phases, which are all pretty normal and most interesting one in some sense. But there are some exotic phases which are gapped, like quantum Hall phases, for example, and then confining Higgs phases of gauge theories. Now, and the modern, well, the old point of view was that actually gap phases of matter are not very interesting, but the modern viewpoint is that they're very interesting because there are lots of them, and there's a but nevertheless there's a hope of classifying them all, in some sense, because one can, for example, distinguish these different phases by looking at non-trivial spatial topology, and then look at the degeneracy and how it depends on the spatial topology, or one can look at the edge physics, and one can discover different gapped phases in this way. So an example is like fractional quantum Hall states, which are have interesting ground state degeneracy. In this case, a spatial slice is a Riemann surface with some genus, and then there's a trivial dependence on the genus. And in this case, infrared physics is described by a non-trivial three-dimensional field theory, which is actually topological. In general, I would like to classify these gapped phases or families of gapped local Hamiltonians on the lattice up to deformation, like up to homotopy in the class of these Hamiltonians. And what do I mean by this? Well, what do I mean by this gap local and lattice? Well, lattice means that Hilbert space is a tensor product of Hilbert spaces over some spatial points. And by lattice, I really mean a triangulation. So I have a little d dimensional lattice of lattice or triangulation, a little d dimensional space. And there's some finite dimensional Hilbert space attached to every vertex in the triangulation. The Hilbert space is like that. So more generally, one can also have maybe Hilbert spaces attached to maybe one, well, not just to zero simplices of triangulation, but also to one simplices, for example. Local means that Hamiltonian has this form where each term acts as identity on almost all factors in this Hilbert space. That is, if you have the term HV is labeled by some particular vertex, acts non-trivially, that is not as identity, only in the on a few Hilbert spaces in the neighborhood of this V. That means that's locality. And then gapped is what I said, that is, if you want to diagonalize this Hamiltonian, then and look at the limit of infinite system, there's a gap between the ground state and the first excited state. Now, it's not clear how to classify these, but it is believed that gapped phases can be classified using topological quantum field theory. So that seems like a bit easier. So the idea is that the infrared limit of a gapped phase is described by topological field theory, and this topological field theory actually carries complete information about the phase. Now, if the spatial dimension is greater than 2 or even equal to 2, then it's actually still pretty difficult to classify. Nobody can classify all topological, nobody has classified all topological field theory even in 2 spatial dimensions. But still, it's more manageable. And, well, we'd like to check this, but again, it's difficult because neither gapped phases nor TQFTs have been classified. Now, to make some progress, one can, for example, well, so this is still a conjecture that gapped phases can be classified by topological field theories. But to make some non-trivial checks, one, for example, can impose some additional constraints on the phase. And one nice constraint is invertibility. And we can look at invertible phases and field theories. Well, if it simplifies the problem too much, you can complicate it a bit more then by adding symmetry. So let me, to get something non-trivial. So let me remind a little bit about TQFTs, and then we'll discuss invertible and symmetric phases in TQFTs. Well, you have d plus 1 dimensions, then TQFT attaches a vector, attaches a number called the partition function, which I call z of m, to this closed, say, oriented d plus 1 manifold. If you have a closed oriented d manifold, then you get a vector space, which is finite dimensional, which you call h of n. And if you have a d minus 1 manifold, attach a linear category, and so forth. And, well, this really what's called an extended TQFT. And then there are some also ways to assign algebraic objects to manifolds with boundaries and corners. And then there are some axioms, which I will not try to spell out. As I said, we can simplify the problem of comparing TQFTs and phases by restricting to invertible TQFTs and phases. So both, you can, you know, take tensor products or some sort of product of both gapped phases and TQFTs. So you can, the operation of, so you can like stack together sort of phases, just taking two independent phases of matter and just putting one on top of each other. And you can take the same thing, do the same thing with TQFTs. So this operation is associative in some sense and symmetric. But doesn't necessarily have an inverse. Not every object has an inverse. Well, if a phase or TQFT has an inverse, that is, there's some other phase. Question?
Yeah, I'm trying to understand if this is a trivial statement or a profound statement, the identification of ground states of a gap phase with topological field. Is the point that, from the condensed matter point of view, that the information in the ground state of a gap phase gets the measured information?
Well, yeah, that's a hand-waving argument in favor of this, but in fact, it's much more complicated than this. It's a non-trivial. It's a very non-trivial statement because, and the reason it's non-trivial because what exactly is a phase? Has not been exactly defined because a phase is really some equivalence class of Hamiltonians on ever larger lattices or something like that. So it's not like some Hamiltonians may not even correspond to phases because you cannot sort of take the limit. You don't have a limit if you take a very large system in some sense. So it's subtle to define what a phase is. That's the main difficulty.
So that's what it's defined.
Yeah, well, and once you have a good definition of phase, it should come out, but again, it's not known how to do it. So for now, I'm just doing this intuitively. So physicists know what a phase is, or they think they do, and one can compare, and mathematicians think that they know what TQFT is, and we can compare the results. Now, so if you look at invertible phases, it's a bit easier because these are phases. Well, according to one definition, a phase which is invertible is called short-range entangled, but that's not the same sense in which, like, say, various people in this conference use this word, so I just call it invertible. So, say, Kitaev says that invertible is the same as short-range entangled, but it's not the same as what other people use this term for. So just say invertible. And, well, the invertible phase, or TQFT, has a unique state for any closed spatial geometry. And that's one signature of the invertible phase, but that's not the only one, because being invertible is stronger than that. Now, sometimes in some particular dimensions, if you just restrict to invertible field theories or phases, you get nothing interesting. Like the only invertible phase of TQFT is just the trivial one. So I can complicate the problem a bit to make it more interesting. For example, one can look at a situation when your phase of TQFT has symmetry G. I will assume that symmetry, this G, which is a group, is finite. Now, if I have a lattice model that is defining a phase, we say it has a symmetry G if each Hilbert space is a representation of the group. And the action on the group, therefore G acts also on the tensor product, and you assume that it actually commutes with the Hamiltonian. That's what it means for a phase to have symmetry G. And then you want to classify such phases up to homotopy, and maybe also impose invertibility. And now similarly, well, what do we do with TQFT? Well, if we want to have TQFT with a symmetry G, we replace our category, n-category, of closed-oriented manifolds, or bodisms, with sort of decorated manifolds. Say, you have, say, closed-oriented manifolds with G-bundles. So, equivalently, you can say you have not just an oriented manifold, but a manifold with a map to the classifying space of the group, which is the, well, equivalent to some space whose first homotopy group is G and all others are trivial, the Eilenberg-MacLane space. Yes?
You said there's some conjecture that TQFTs are the gap phases corresponding to TQFTs.
Yes.
Does it go the other way? If you have a
well, you must have unitary. Presumably every, no. Well, it depends again how you exactly define TQFTs. So, like, there could be some anomaly, well, projective TQFTs which don't correspond to lattice models, like Chern-Simons theory with a simple Lie group, for example, doesn't. You need to properly define which class of TQFTs you're considering. It should be unitary, it should be sort of non-chiral or not projective. So there are some restrictions there, too. So, so it's not a very precise conjecture. You need to be careful how you define. There are lots of versions of what TQFT means. So now we have manifolds with a map to classifying space of the group or with a G bundle, which is the same thing, basically. And the G covariant TQFT attaches a vector space to every G bundle over a closed oriented little d manifold. And again, if you want to impose invertibility, in particular, this means that this vector space is one dimensional. So it's, from condensed matter point of view, it's like twisting a system with sort of some sort of G bundle. Now, there's a further modification you can try to do, which is similar to introducing G-bundle to complicate the problem. One can allow the vector spaces to be graded by group Z-mod 2, which is physically is the what's called fermion parity, minus 1 to the fermion number. So so vectors in the Hilbert space with a negative fermion parity are called fermionic, and vectors with a parity minus 1 positive are called bosonic. Now, that's actually an important modification because it also affects what you mean by tensor product. So they're different. It's one thing when you tensor vector space, another thing when you tensor super vector spaces, that is, Z2 graded vector space. In the following sense, that if you look at, operators on, say Hamiltonian is even, there's bosonic operator. It takes bosonic states to bosonic and fermionic to fermionic. But it may be made out of fermionic operators acting on various sides of this lattice. And the point is that in the usual tensor product, operators acting on different sides commute, but in the fermionic, in the Z2 graded case, if they're fermionic, they actually anti-commute. So it's a different notion of a tensor product. There's operators defined differently. So to have this notion then of, there's a different notion. There's also sort of fermionic version of the notion of a phase where everything is Z2 graded. And we can also, you know, add symmetry group G, I assume it just commutes with this.
That means it doesn't include the physical U1.
Yeah, I don't want to consider U1. It's possible, but it's just harder to define TQFTs with the Lie group symmetries. So now this explains what a fermionic phase means. What is a fermionic TQFT then? Well, that's actually an interesting question, not really trivial. If you deal with unitary relativistic one-on field theory, statistic correlates with spin. So if you have fermions in the theory, then probably there are fermions in the sense of the anti-commuting fields, then there must be spinners. So the manifold then must have spin structure. So natural guess is that the relevant notion of TQFT is spin to QFT. That is where your manifold, not just closed-oriented manifolds, but are equipped with spin structure. I'll discuss later what spin structure means, but for now, it's just some sort of discrete topological datum on top of orientation, which you need to specify. Now, this spin to QFTs have not been much studied, even in low dimensions. So that's interesting to consider how they can be constructed, what sort of algebra you need to construct them. So, I'm going to think about extended. All the manifolds, dimension D, D minus one, D minus two, all supposed to have spin structure. They're all oriented spin manifolds. That's all. That's what extended means. My source category is not just category of borderism, but spin borderisms. Okay, so first I need to say something about spin structure. Oh, by the way, let me just. Before I'll discuss this conjecture then that fermionic phases are classified by spin to QFTs, let me actually remind you explain what spin to QFT spin structure is. Well, on the most basic level, it's like something like a Z2 gauge field on M, but not quite the same thing. So to explain that, I need to, also for the future use, I need to remind some mathematical terminology. So I will always think about my manifolds with some triangulation, even though in the end, nothing will depend on triangulation, or shouldn't depend on triangulation.
Just a second. So there is a notion of TQFT with values of any symmetric monoidal.
Yeah, and here I'm going to take a super vector space.
If you take super spaces instead of spaces, then this is what you're talking about.
Yes, plus I also want to replace the source category with the spin-oriented manifolds. So modifying both spin, source and target. Now, I need to remind you like something about some notion, really basic notions from topology. So I'm going to be typically dealing with, when I think about homology or cohomology, I'm going to think about simplicial homology or cohomology, which means that my manifold has a triangulation. And then I remember that the K chain with values in some abelian group, just squiggly gothic A, is just a function on K simplices. So that's a very simple group. It's a free abelian group denoted like this. And then, well, there's also a group of cochains, actually the same thing. But I'll actually only discuss the case. In this talk, what we'll make use of is the case when this abelian group is Z mod 2 or U1, which I'll write this way, R mod Z. Because, you know, if you take a log of an element U1, you've got the element in R mod defined up to integers. So I like to think about this way because I like to think about groups, group operation as addition of elements and not multiplication. In case of chains, there is functions on the K simplices. There's a boundary operator, which lowers the degree of a chain by one. There's also a co-boundary operator, which increases the degree of a co-chain by one. And they both square to zero. And the chain annihilated by del is called a cycle. And the chain annihilated by delta is called the cocycle. And have the standard notation for cycles and cocycles of degree k. And then homology and cohomology can be computed from cycles and cocycles as usual by looking at chains modular boundaries, that is, images of the operator del, or co-chains modular co-boundaries, images of operator del. So that's the notation for these homology groups with values in the Lie algebra, in abelian group A. Now, in our case, it's also there's an additional thing we need to remember that if this A is actually a ring with commutative ring, then for us the case only interesting case is when abelian group is actually Z mod 2. Then you also have associative Bellini operation on cocycles, but not cycles, which usually known by cup product. And this operation is not commutative or even supercommutative, but if you yeah, I guess for me that doesn't matter. But in any case,
I have some proposal for what it would mean, but you probably don't want
to. Well, I really meant general ring. But in any case, if you exchange the order, in general, there's on the cocycle, there is some, they're not simply related. There is some correction term. But on the level of cohomology, you don't see that. If you look at multiplication of cohomology, the cup product on cocycles gives a cup product on cohomology classes, and that is
the correction the product of differentials of alpha and beta?
No. This some well, that's what gives rise to Steenrod square. So there's some non-trivial operations of lower degree Bellini operation which control the defect. This Steenrod lower cup, well, higher cup product. And then, yeah, so that, I just want to say here that because of this defect, you can also define this so-called Steenrod squares, which increase the degree by m for any, well, m is like 0, 1, 2, and 3. So this will appear on the last slide, I think, in this talk. Okay, so what about spin structures? Well, I don't have time to go into details, but roughly spin structure is a way to parallel transport spinners if you have a Riemannian metric. So and that essentially what enables us to define a Dirac operator. So formally, it's just a way to lift the principal SOD bundle oriented orthonormal frames to a principal spin D bundle. Okay. Now, how do we think about that? Well, first of all, not every oriented manifold has a spin structure. There's some abstraction known as a second Stifel-Whitney class, which is a class in H2 of the manifold. If it vanishes, then you have spin structures, and if it does not vanish, then you don't have it. Well, for our purposes, actually, that's not an issue because we only consider the case of manifold of dimension 3 or less, where it all vanishes if the manifold is oriented. So now, furthermore, any two spin structures differ by Z2 gauge field. That is an element of degree 1 cohomology. So, well, that means you can identify actually the set of spin structures with this cohomology group. And if you pick one, then all others are obtained by adding elements from here, but there's no like natural choice. What is a sort of a trivial spin structure? So that's why they're like gauge fields, but not quite. Well, here's an example. For example, on a circle, there are just two spin structures because you know H1 is Zmod2. And in this case, there is sort of canonical identification. The trivial gauge field called the Ramon spin structure, the non-trivial one corresponds to the called Niver-Schwarz spin structure in the string theory literature. And mathematicians, well, this is sort of an antiperiodic spin structure, this is periodic spin structure. Mathematicians have their own terminology for that. But if you already go to Riemann surface of general G, well, genus G, then there are some 2^2 G spin structures, but there's no like one which is called trivial spin structure, unlike the case of Z2 gauge field. There are as many Z2 gauge field, but in that case, there's a trivial one. Here, you know, we don't know which one is trivial spin structure. But you can classify at least them into two classes called even and odd spin structures. And I mean, it turns out that if you compute the number of zero modes of the Dirac operator for a particular spin structure, its number is not a topological invariant, but number modulo 2 is a topological invariant. And you can classify spin structures into whether the number of zero modes is even or odd. Okay, so now let's go back to this conjecture that a spin to QFTs are related to fermionic phases. The reason it's non-trivial is because, non-obvious is because, you know, the argument between for the relation between spin and statistics, the usual arguments rely on things like Lorentz invariance of the theory. Say in non-altruistic quantum mechanics, we have, you know, even we have just rotation invariance, translation invariance, but no Lorentz invariance, there's no connection. Only consistent to consider, spin a half particles, which are bosons, or anti-commuting fields, but which have carry no spin. So it seems like it depends on Lorentz invariance. On the other hand, we're dealing everything. We're working on a lattice or triangulation, which means locally there's just some lattice system. There's no rotation invariance whatsoever. Now, it's not even clear what the spin structure means because I don't have a Riemannian metric in my situation, just have some triangulation. What do I mean by spin structure? Well, the key point is actually this Stifel-Whitney class can be defined combinatorially. It's a well-known characterization actually due to Stifel himself, from the 1930s, I think. And just using triangulation, you can determine whether manifold is spin or not spin. And moreover, if it is spin, if that obstruction combinatorially vanishes, actually can define also spin structure combinatorially. I'll discuss it later. Another remark that, in principle, people who work on lattice gauge theories and lattice QCD, they should have encountered this difficulty that fermions must be spinners. But they kind of avoided that. They do latticize Dirac operator, but they only work in some very special geometries like four-dimensional torus, something like that, where there's no difference between spin structure and Z2 gauge field. So they sort of avoid all these difficulties. Okay, now let's try to check this conjecture. by doing some computation. Let's look at invertible fermionic phases, and to make it more life more interesting, let's suppose we have a symmetry G. And just look at two-dimensional case. There is one space, one time. Already in this case, you get something non-trivial. So these phases have been classified, and these two papers discuss how to classify them using so-called matrix product states. And this is the answer. This last factor actually doesn't depend on the G, it's just Z-mod 2. Well, the first two factors, they have to do with the, they do depend on G, these are cohomology groups of G.
So, is it true that for mathematicians, this would be, you can classify, tensor categories which have G graded vector spaces, but morphisms would be either odd or even.
You're talking about 2+1 dimensional case, I guess. I'm talking about general dimension. You specifically want to specialize to 2+1 dimensional TQFTs or phases, something like that.
This particular.
No, this 2D means 1+1, so this is one categorical level down.
Ah, okay.
So this is like Z2 graded algebras.
Ah, okay.
I'll actually come back to that.
Great, super algebra.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll actually discuss this later.
G-graded
super algebra. Yeah, but I'll. Come back to this later, to this relation with algebras and grading, but it's just a sort of TQFT side, if you wish. On the physics side, on the side of phases, there is a description of phases using, this is a very nice description of phases, mathematically precise using matrix product states, which only applies to 1+1 dimension. That enables classification, and this is the answer. And the answer is.
What's the point of H0? This is just Z-mod 2?
Yes, it's Z-mod 2.
I think you were writing it so that you would generalize to higher level.
So, okay, so this is last factor.
Do you know that's a product in general, not an extension?
It is an extension. This is the group law.
Oh.
As a set,
Sorry.
As a set, it is just this product, but it is actually, should actually be a group, right? Invertible phases form a group because they're invertible, right, phases. You can tensor them, but also have an inverse. So this is the group law. It's slightly non-trivial because there's nonlinear correction, meaning that it's a non-trivial extension of this by this. I don't know, actually, I don't remember whether in these papers the group law was discussed. Maybe Lucas remembers, but anyway, this is a non-trivial correction there. It's very easy to see from the formulas in those papers. There is one.
What is one half?
Okay, here's my, these are integer valued. These are values, these are cocycles valued. In R mod Z.
Yeah.
So these are valued in Z mod 2. So this guy is integer, but they divide by 2, give me half integer. So I can, you know, so this is, this guy is valued in fractions, right? The number is less than 1.
Ah, okay. So what happens just notation? I mean, you embed Z mod 2 into R mod Z.
Yes. Okay. I don't know how would you write that because. I think about Z mod 2 as precise integers modulo 2, so they're integer guys, integer valued guys. Okay. Now what about spin TQFTs? Let's compare with the spin TQFTs. Well, spin TQFTs have been studied, at least in two dimensions, by Moore and Siegel. I think it's pretty much the only, well, it's one of like three papers until recently which studied that. They actually studied only the case when G is trivial, so let's at least try to get that Z2 from this Moore and Siegel paper. Well, actually discuss the invertible case too in detail, in some detail, and say that there's only one non-trivial TQFT, which depends on spin structure, which is invertible also. So it's invertible meaning that the partition function is some non-zero number on any Riemann surface, and the Hilbert space is one-dimensional for circle with any spin structure. So what do we get there? Well, it turns out actually the only thing you can write down is partition function is this. Well, ARF invariant, what's called ARF invariant of the spin structure. That is that dimension of the Dirac operator modulo 2. It's a sign, but it depends on spin structure in a non-trivial way. So the vector space attached to a circle, again, there are actually two different spin structures in a circle, so there are two different vector spaces, but it should be one dimensional for both choices because, again, it's invertible theory. And again, it's one, well, so nothing, so the only thing is the grading. This is two graded vector spaces. So it turns out that in this case, vector space for Neuver-Schwarz, there's antiperiodic spin structure is. Even, there's bosonic, and for periodic, Ramon, it's odd. Okay. So we'll discuss the algebra attached to, well, the category attached to a point. Okay, so Now, actually, interested in this, more interested in the equivariant case. It's more information there. But at least we get this Z2, right? So there's a unique theory in two dimensions, which is invertible and spin. This is this partition function. And if you take products with itself, they're going to be trivial because, you know, the square of this is just one, right? It's just a sign.
Well, what are the size of the trace? Is that what about the one where you take lambda
of
the order
characteristic? For me, I'm classifying them up to homotopy. So, yeah.
So what does this M?
M is a two-dimensional oriented manifold.
And eta?
Eta is a spin structure. So.
Well, I know R is invariant of a quadratic form.
I'll discuss it later. But the point is that every spin structure gives a rise to a quadratic function on H1 of the manifold with Z2 coefficients, which refines intersection form. That's the Arf invariant of the quadratic function. The different ways to define the Arf invariant. For the spin structure. One way is, as I said, just define like this, just dimension of the kernel of Dirac operator modulo 2. And then it is a result of Atiyah that's equivalent to what I said, basically. Or actually, Atiyah and Johnson, so combination of the two. Now interested in the equivariant case. Moore and Siegel don't discuss the combination of like spin and equivariant, but luckily for us, is a recent result of Fried and Hopkins, which discuss in general invertible equivariant TQFTs, which we heard about this already in this conference. And in this case, in low dimensions, you essentially need to reduce to the question, the answer is just like the dual of torsion part of the spin bordism of BG. So that's all we need from that work. And if you look at the computation of the spin bordism group, it turns out actually you get that there's some special sequence which computes that, and you get the following answer for the dual of this spin bordism. You can just get in two dimensions, just this. Which, and in fact, the group structure is the way I described before, so it's non-trivial extension. That actually takes some work to figure out why the extension is non-trivial. It's nice actually to describe explicitly what this. I'll use this. What actually the partition function of this look like? I won't describe the vector space attached to a circle with a G bundle and the spin structure, but let me describe at least the partition function. So it depends on the manifold, which is some Riemann surface. Depends on the gauge field and depends on the spin structure, which I call eta. So A is a gauge field. So what is a gauge field? Well, the gauge field is some homomorphism. It's just defined by its holonomies, which means it's a map homomorphism from pi 1 of the manifold to G. You can also triangulate a manifold, which is my preferred point of view anyway. And then G gauge field is just a G-valued function on one simplicity on edges, which is actually cocycle in the sense that if you compose it along any triangle, you get identity element. So how do I attach something, some number to this data? So a manifold with a gauge field and a spin structure. Okay, so first we need a nice description of a spin structure. So it turns out that, if you look at the manifold, which it has a genus G two-dimensional manifold, it has a attached vector space. Well, it has a first degree one cohomology, which you can think of it as a vector space over the field with two elements. And in this vector space, there's a non-degenerate bilinear form with values also in Z mod 2 called intersection form. For reasons which I don't explain. And then there's a notion of purely algebraically, if you have a function, a bilinear function on a vector space with a value somewhere, you can define a what's called a quadratic refinement of that function, which is a function of a single variable. What does it mean, quadratic refinement? Well, it's some function on this same vector space, in this case, this first cohomology, which is which satisfies this. It's zero at zero element, and it's not linear, but it's sort of defect of being nonlinear is this bilinear form. Well, it turns out, actually, every spin structure gives you a quadratic refinement of this B, and it's a one-to-one correspondence. So this is the result of IT, I think. And I don't want to go, the argument is actually very simple and beautiful, but I don't have the time to explain that. And there are different ways to show it, actually. Johnson has a pure topological way of explaining this, but Atiyah has analytic, a beautiful analytic argument. Okay, now we understand how to describe spin structure, sort of topologically. It's a quadratic function on essentially Z2 gauge fields, which is not just arbitrary, but has this property that its defect sort of being nonlinear is precisely something given here. Because this part is purely topological, just given, get it from the manifold. Okay, so now we need to describe the partition function. Okay, so we have a gauge field. So you can think of it combinatorially as sort of an element of G for every edge of the triangulation. Now, I also have, so I have this three cohomology classes called alpha, beta, and gamma. One of them, say, this is called beta. Beta is this degree one cohomology class, which is, I think, as a homomorphism from G to Z mod 2. So if I apply this homomorphism to my gauge field A, I get a Z2 valued gauge field, right? So let's call it beta A. Mathematically, it's a pullback of the cohomology class on BG to M using the interpretation of A as a map to BG. So similarly, if you have a, well, more or less trivially sort of from, but not truly from a mathematical viewpoint, if you have a cohomology class on some cocycle on BG, which represents my cohomology class, I can pull it back to a cocycle on M using, again, think about gauge field as a map to BG. This sort of gives, me some sort of R mod Z valued two form on M. It's a B, sort of flat B field. So now I can just integrate that guy over the last one, over the manifold, get a number, some phase. I get a sign from here, from this beta. I just take, see, beta A just takes Z2 valued gauge field on M. So every spin structure gives me a quadratic function on that set. You can just apply this quadratic function to that gauge field to get a, you know, a number, which is either 0 or 1. And then gives me a sign factor here. So I already made use of alpha and beta, and then gamma just when gamma is 0, it just gives you nothing. And when gamma is 1, it just gives you alpha invariant, which is a sign. So that's the partition function of this most general topological phase on a general closed manifold to manifold with general spin structure and gauge field.
Can you say what you attach
to? No, I won't say what it is. Well, later we'll see how to get it in principle. So so mathematically, so okay, so we sort of agree, see that the result of two different computations do the same thing. On one hand, we have a physical computation of what a phase. What phases are classified by, fermionic phase. On the other hand, we have a computation which tells you, of spin cobordism group, which tells you what TQFTs are classified by. But how can we understand that? For example, if you just started from the TQFT side, well, there's some abstract cobordism class, can actually find the lattice model which represents that, which corresponds to the TQFT. I'll actually construct Euclidean lattice models, that is, in two Euclidean space dimensions, instead of looking at, you know, Minkowski sort of signature, the Hamiltonian picture. So this states, well, and the lattice model in this context called a state sum model. And the most familiar ones are called bosonic state sum models, which when you have some variables living in some finite sets on every simplex or over the triangulation, then you attach a weight to every labeling of simplices by these guys, and then you sum over all possible weights. Things like Ising model are like that. Now, fermionic, so this you can think about a sum as an integral over some discrete finite set, if you wish. Now, what is a fermionic state sum model? Well, you just have some also some Grassmann variables living, elements of the Grassmann algebra living on some simplices, say on, and then you, a partition function involves, you also, may also have bosonic variables that take very finite sets on like edges and, you know, in sides and triangles or whatever. And then your partition function, well, you have a weight for every bosonic configuration, but the weight may also be a function of these fermionic variables. Then to get a partition function, I first integrate over fermionic variables and then sum over bosonic ones. So that's fermionic state sum variable, state sum model. Well, for example, Dirac action for free fermions is actually supposed to be an example of a such fermionic state sum model, but it's not topological, of course. I'm interested in topological state sum models because I want to get spin TQFT in the end. That is something which does not change if, well, In the end, the partition function should be independent of, like, triangulation, for example, which triangulation is used. Now, let me look at the case when this alpha and gamma are zero. So the general case will follow once we understand this special case of the phase. So as we saw, this partition function in that case is just basically this sign. A sign is this quadratic function of this class of the Z2 gauge field, which is called beta A. So all we need to figure out is how to construct some sort of state sum model, which computes this sign given a spin structure. So let's just call it beta, so we don't have to drag it on. So it's just Z2 gauge field on my manifold, two-dimensional manifold. And I want to construct a lattice model, so I'm going to think about this gauge field as a one cocycle, that is a one Z2 valued function on one simplicity satisfying the constraint that's closed. Okay. That's how I think about beta. So let me construct the fermionic state sum model. I'm going to, first of all, I'm going to place Grassmann variables. So this construction is due to this paper of Gu and Wen, which I cited in the beginning, in a special case of, you know, two dimensions. So we place those beta can take value 0 or 1. So if on particular edge it takes value 1, we're going to place a pair of Grassmann variables called theta and theta bar. If the beta on this edge is 0, we don't place anything there. The integration marriage is going to be product over all edges and this d theta d theta bar. Now, well, that's the measure. Now, and it's well defined because it's bosonic. It doesn't matter how we order these edges because it's bosonic. But what about the integrant? Well, the integrant, well, in this case, by the way, we're not going to have any bosonic variables, only fermionic ones. We're not going to sum over anything, any bosonic, just integrate over fermionic ones. So the integrant is some product over all two simplices. And, well, it's a bit yucky to write down the integrant. First of all, you need to choose something called branching structure on your triangulation, which essentially gives like a local order on the vertices. Later, of course, we'll have to worry that nothing depends on this ordering. Well, I assume that M is oriented, so each triangle, which you call P, because for Plaquette, is also oriented. Now, when you have a branching structure, since it gives a local order on vertices, it actually gives independently orientation of every two simplex, so you actually can compare the two, so you get two kinds of simplices, sort of, with the two orientations, the global and local, agree or disagree, plus and minus simplices. So this orientation allows you to, and branching structure allow you to tell sort of if you have an edge where the two variables live. So one theta belongs to the sort of every edge is shared by a plus triangle and a minus triangle, and the theta lives on the sort of plus side and the theta bar on the other side, on the minus side. That tells you which theta belongs to which triangle sort of. Now, in the weight of a triangle is a product of all Grassmann variables on its edges, so taking the right sort of order. Okay, so you get this monomial made out of thetas and theta bars for every two simplex. So since beta is a cocycle, every triangle has either no fermionic variables or two fermionic variables. So you get each factor is actually bosonic. Okay, and then you're supposed to integrate the whole thing. Now, of course, well, because the orientation, so you have standard orientation. The two vertices are ordered, so you have the same orientation for.
But it seems, I mean, certainly that could be like the 1-2 edge on one triangle, the 2-3 edge on another.
No, you have a locally all. So the orientation of the edges come from the local order on vertices. So it's the same order. So. So you have this arrow, so you have orientation of every triangle, right? Now, if you look at the orientation of the edge coming from the branching structure, if it agrees with the orientation here, it will disagree with the orientation there because it's the same arrow on each.
Oh, I see. Right?
So you cannot agree with both because they're oppositely sort of, the sense of direction is opposite, right, for the two triangles next to each other. So anyway, so the result of integration is just a sign. because you have as many thetas and theta bars in the integrand as there are thetas and theta bars in the measure. But the sign depends on this, on many things. It depends on the cacycle, this one cacycle. It depends on the triangulation, also the branching structure. Well, so we need to fix that because we want to get the topological model, and the sign depends on all these details, which shouldn't matter. For example, if I replace cacycle by a cohomologous cacycle, it's like a gauge transformation, by Z2 gauge field, the sign shouldn't change. Well, this one does change. So what do we do about that? Well, I won't discuss the general case, but for example, it's discussed in these papers of Gu and Wen, and also repeated in this paper with Davide, which we wrote. But for simplicity, let the triangulation be a barycentric subdivision of another triangulation. So you divide every one simplex and every two simplex, put a point in the center of every one simplex and every two simplex, and then subdivide, connect them all with the edges. So in that case, actually, there's a canonical branching structure, but they still have this issue about dependence on triangulation and dependence of whether how the, well, it's still dependence on the how, if it replaces beta with the cohomologous cacycle, the result will change still. So how do we fix that? Well, we need the correction factor, which depends on these things. And the correction factor depends on some other datum. So suppose we choose the sum of all vertices in this triangulation. It turns out that it's actually is a boundary of some one chain. I call this chain E. This chain is not canonical. There, you can always add to this chain in some cycle, right? So essentially, this choice of E determines the spin structure, turns out. So how does it define it? Well, as explained, suppose spin structures are basically a semi-quadratic function on gauge fields, on these two gauge fields. Well, it turns out if you multiply that factor sigma of beta, it depends on all these additional choices, and multiply by this, this will give a quadratic function on this betas, which is actually, first of all, independent of the choice of the cacycle within its cohomology class. The second is actually quadratic, and third, it refines its intersection form. It's precisely the data that TS has is the spin structure. So we trade the dependence on those irrelevant data for choice of this guy, and that guy can be thought of as a choice of spin structure. So that's a funny quadratic form can be constructed indeed using fermionic state, some model of the, introduced by Gu and Wen. So, and that's actually very general. When you construct a weight out of Grassmann variables in any dimensions, then you need to choose some order in vertices. And then when you try to say, well, I don't want anything to depend on that order. How do I do that? Well, you need some correction factor. That correction factor, it depends on some extra datum. And that datum actually is always spin structure. So when you try to make sense of fermionic states and models and require them to be topological and depend on these choices of order, you can do it only at the expense of introducing dependence on spin structure. In some sense, the spin statistics relation, but on a lattice without using a Lorentz invariance. Now, as I said, once you have a construction of this quadratic function, you can also get other things which we need. Like the most general phase also has this alpha, beta, and gamma. Well, alpha is just an integral, ordinary integral. It just there's nothing to construct there. But there's also this ARF invariant. Or turns out that you can also get it from a fermionic state sum model because actually it can be expressed as an average of this quadratic function over all gauge fields. So I can think of this already as a fermionic state sum model, and then just sum over all possible choices of this cacycle. It's like Z2 gauge field coupled to fermionic variables. That gives me the ARF invariant.
So this is a two-dimensional result.
Yes.
What if there's a higher dimension?
Well, I'll say something about it. So therefore, you get a fermionic state sum construction for any of this partition function, well, spin boardism to QFTs. This is invertible spin to QFTs, covariance spin to QFTs. So for every one of them, I can exhibit a fermionic state sum model. And that's why it's a quite concrete model. And that sort of explains, in some sense, why you also get the same thing from matrix product states. They both, that one's sort of Hamiltonian approach, but I think can also reduce, well, can also figure out what happens on a circle and get actually to the matrix product representation that Pitkovsky and Kitaev and Wen and collaborators consider. Now that we see that things do work out for invertible TQFTs with symmetry, how about relaxing invertibility constraint? And then I don't want to consider a covariance anymore because I could. It's not actually essential, but let me relax invertibility and then set the symmetry group to be trivial. So how about constructing spin to QFTs, which are not equivariant, just ordinary ones, but depend on spin structure in two dimensions. Now I need to review how to first, sort of what previous construction actually tells immediately how to do that. And let me remind you first of all how to do it for ordinary bosonic to QFTs, just oriented ones. It's a very simple state sum construction in that case, which starts with a semi-simple algebra, not necessarily commutative. And it's Frobenius algebra, so it has, that is, it has a scalar product, which, you know, with this angle, well, with brackets, satisfy this invariance property. So what's the construction? Well, again, let's start with the triangulation of a manifold, even though nothing will depend on that on triangulation. You're going to construct a sort of bosonic state sum, so what are the choices? Well, what are the labelings of your simplices? Well, nothing is going to live on vertices, but edges are going to be, nothing is going to live on two simplices, but edges are going to be labeled by some basis elements of the algebra. It's going to even choose an orthonormal basis in this algebra, with respect to this metric. It doesn't have to be, but convenient. Then the structure constants in this algebra are denoted by CIJK, the cyclically symmetric. And then suppose you have a two simplex labeled by, well, so then to a two simplex, you have three edges. So you have three basis element, EI, EJK, and the structure constant corresponding to that. So you attach that element of A tensor, A tensor A, to this two simplex. And then when you have several, just take products over all simplices. And then these EIs, which are neighbors, you just contract them using the scalar product, or its inverse. Well, no, it's actually the scalar product. It gives actually one, it's contracted because I'm using orthonormal basis. So that gives you some just products of a bunch of CIJKs for all two simplices. And then you sum overall labelings of elements, of edges by these elements of the basis. And that gives you a state sum model. And it's topological, actually. And the reason it's topological, because you can show that it's, the number you get is invariant under subdivisions of the triangulation. So actually, it's a GQFT. Now, you can actually also compute the, not just the partition function, but also the, what the space attached to a circle, just the center of this non-commutative algebra, well, this not necessarily commutative algebra A. It's an old construction due to these authors. But now we can actually easily correct that.
So what is the physical interpretation of that QFT?
Well, it's in reality, since it's a semi-simple algebra, it just corresponds to a situation where we have a bunch of vacua. So this algebra in the end doesn't matter all that much because it's a semi-simple, so it's a sum of matrix algebras. So only the number of the summons matters. And then you get a QFT, which is just has a n vacua, have n summons.
So it's like
spontaneous. Yeah, right. Yeah. For example, in this paper, they discuss in some detail the case when you have, say, group algebra, some group, and that you get, then you get spontaneous group broken down to nothing, right?
And there is nothing.
This is not very interesting. But you get something slightly more interesting if you have, say, depends on spin, okay? So in that case, slightly more, not by much. But it does become more interesting if you consider a situation which, with a covariance, with a group, with some symmetry group. One can refine this. There's a Turayev, for example, has a construction of this equivariant to QFTs, which are depends also on, on some group using this
method.
Depend
on what? So,
you can consider equivariant to QFTs in two dimensions, mm-hmm. where you have manifolds with G bundles. And then the corresponding datum is what Turayev calls biangular algebras, which are semi-simple sort of algebras, some G-grading and some additional constraint, so which I don't want to explain. So the similar construction gives you then a covariant GQFTs, which is a bit more fun.
But the physical picture is that you just have some big group and it's kind of partly broken.
Yeah. Not in a symmetry group. No, I mean the, yeah, I guess, yeah. Some extension. It's invertible. Well, first is a special case of that, but again, in this case, it's just sum of invertible ones. It's, in the end, it just get a field theory, which is a sum of several invertible phases. Just it's like a cycle in every sort of vacuum, which tells you how the group is realized. Now, if you look at now its spin, let's look at now its spin case. Well, in this case, you just use semi-simple Frobenius algebra, but with a Z2 grading. So in this case, you do this, essentially the same thing, but when you contract all these basis elements, some of them can be fermionic. So to bring them together, you need to do some permutation, then get an extra minus sign. Now, what is this minus sign? Well, it's actually easy to say it's the same minus sign which Gwynn Wendt result of fermionic integration, which he called sigma of beta before. But then we know that actually this is a bit defective because this is not invariant under various things that like, you could try to do, like changing triangulation, changing cocycle by equivalent one, or changing the branching structure. So what do you do? Well, we know the solution now. We just introduce this correction factor, which introduces dependence on the spin structure, again, in the same way as a quadratic function on H1. And then gives you a triangulation-dependent partition function, but depending on spin structure. That is on this choice of this one chain, which whose boundary is the sum of all vertices, essentially. Okay, so now we have a construction of spin TQFTs from a fermionic state sum, then. That is, involves both summation over bosonic and fermionic variables. Well, integration of fermionic variables and summation over bosonic ones. That actually is quite interesting because this datum, Z2 graded semi-simple algebra, essentially the same data that Turayev's uses construct TQFTs with symmetry Z mod 2. So there's some correspondence then between, you can use the same data to construct a spin TQFT and Z2 symmetric TQFT. So that actually seems a bit surprising because there are no non-trivial, for example, if you look at invertible theories, there are no non-trivial invertible bosonic theories with Z2 symmetry. But this is non-trivial invertible spin theory with this ARF invariant for the partition function. Well, it's because the relation is a bit non-trivial. So the non-trivial invertible fermionic phase is mapped to the trivial bosonic phase with Z2 symmetry. But the trivial fermionic phase is actually mapped to a phase which is not really equivariant, it's actually a broken phase. So it's a bit funny connection. Essentially, what this connection is a topological remnant of bosonization.
That should be reversed.
Sorry?
Yeah. Because for the fermionic, non-trivial fermionic chain on the segment, there's a twofold degeneracy, which can be interpreted as equal signature breaking twofold degeneracy for the bosonic case.
Well, this twofold degeneracy, from my point of view, comes from different spin structures.
It's on an interval.
Oh, an interval. Well, we're not discussing the interval here.
Well, the bosonization only works on an interval anyway.
Well, in some sense, it works. Well, here's how bosonization works. Let me explain in the partition function. So this sort of Fourier transform. The bosonic partition function depends on a gauge field. And the fermionic ones depends on the spin structure, how to map from one to the other. Well, the most boring way possible. So you just weigh your partition functions, sum of all gauge fields, and the Fourier transform. But this is a quadratic function, which depends on the spin structure, and get something spin structure dependent, or backwards. You can check that if you do it twice, you're going to get the same thing with your started from. It's like Fourier transform, but not quite. In Fourier transform, you have a sort of bilinear function, which is linear in the variables you transform in the, and linear in the function, in the variable which you get out, right? This expression is linear in eta in some sense, but it's not linear in beta. It's a quadratic in beta. So it's not really Fourier transform, but it's similar. Okay, now I have a few minutes just to say something about that. Actually, I don't have the time for this, so because I'm running out of time, so I'll just say that you can do the comparison also with the. Let me just go through the invertible case. So you can also consider the 2+1 dimensional phase or 3D phases. So in case TQFTs are classified by invertible TQFTs, which are equivariant classified by the spin borderism of BG, that's actually a non-trivial computation to figure out what this is. In purely in group theory terms. Well, it's a space of solutions of this equation where you have a, well, it's actually a conjecture, I don't know a proof. And John Morgan said that he knows how to prove it in some roundabout way, but well, the dual of the spin borderism of BG or is this. So you have a triple. You upgrade all your cocycles from the previous case, from 2D case to two cocycle and one cocycle, where before you had 2, 1, 0. And write an equation like this. So A is actually now not closed, but it's quadratic in B. And there's also some other correction here, which depends on the one cocycle, which one's Pendragon square. And there's some equivalence relation, which is rather difficult to describe. And there is even more complicated group law, which is to describe here, which makes it into a abelian group. It's not trivial that it's a abelian group because this equation is nonlinear, so there's no easy way to add solutions. But there's a hard way to add solutions. So supposedly that's a space of Bordism, and if you can check this, for example, if you take g equals to z mod 2, you can compute the space of solutions, modulus equivalence relations, actually z mod 8. And that agrees with the physical result of Gu and Levin, which say that if you look at fermionic phases with Z2 symmetry in two spatial dimensions, that's actually classified as a short-range entangled, then you get Z mod 8. That's good. In general, it's kind of hard to compute what this is. You can do special cases. In any case, nobody really did the physical check. Like, nobody computes this. There's no good conjecture on the physics side. Let's say, for general group, what classifies invertible fermionic phases with some particular symmetry, not much to compare with. It's actually the only case I know that is complete understanding. Okay, so now also the general case is actually pretty hard also, both mathematically and physically. The simpler case is the case when gamma is zero. And there's no this term at all here in this equation. Now, in that case, there is a state, fermionic state sum construction of the corresponding spin Bordism class. So one actually can exhibit for every spin Bordism class a specific state sum mod, fermionic state sum model, which depends on the spin structure.
I think in 2001, actually, this is a three-layer ring. So this is the G cross in the categories. You just start from this premodular.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah.
This is a G is not necessarily abelian.
A generic group, yeah. Finite group. Now, in that case, it's a similar thing. So you have some triangulation with three manifold. You want to produce a number. You have this. Sorry, it's a typo, it should be C3, element of C3. Oh, it's the same thing, actually, three manifolds, it doesn't matter. So then you have a three cocycle, you have a two cocycle, and then you have Grassmann variables, which only live on those two simplices where this two cocycle is actually one. And then you have some Grassmann integrals, which is over these variables, and the weight is sort of every three simplex. Fermionic integration, well, it gives you this, again, some sign. Sometimes you have integral of this three cocycle of the whole thing. Now, this is not completely satisfactory because it depends on the branching structure and triangulation and also on the particular choices of those cocycles. But you can fix it again in exactly the same way, just using this factor, sign factor, which depends on some datum, namely choice of, you can look at now at this. Suppose, again, that your triangulation is a barycentric subdivision, just to simplify life. And it turns out that the sum of all edges is actually a one cocycle. And choice of trivialization, which always exists, choice of this two-chain, essentially the dual of the spin structure. It determines, again, quadratic function. Well, I don't want to tell. It's a dual of the spin structure in some sense. So in this way, you get this partition function, which is depends only on this cocycle, on this data, alpha, beta, well, no gamma. Gamma is zero for me.
Gamma, what is gamma? Gamma tells me which things are bosonic and which are fermionic.
I'll say something a bit later about this. So you get this nice partition function, which only valid for gamma equals zero, but still rather general. And it demonstrates that some restricted set of spin Bordism classes does correspond to state sum models. And one can also do the case of non-invertible TQFTs. Now, again, let's forget about equivariant stuff. We just have non-invertible spin TQFTs. Well, let me first remind you what to do with I just have maybe 1 minute, in the oriented case. Well, in that case, there's a construction of Turaif and Viro for the state sum model. The starting point is a spherical fusion category, and then you decorate edges with objects of this category, and two simplices with some basis elements of these home spaces, and assign some weight, and sum over all these labelings. Analogous thing actually works to construct 3D spin TQFTs if you replace spherical fusion category with spherical superfusion category. Namely, you're supposed to essentially look at fusion category over different symmetric tensor category, namely symmetric tensor category of supervector spaces. There's some extra signs than in the pentagon relation to be careful about. So a superfusion category in general is not a fusion category because the pentagon equation has some extra signs. So now that's actually a bit tricky because unlike in the usual case where simple objects all kind of the same, the endomorphism algebra, just the field, complex numbers, here some of them actually, it's a superdivision algebra, but actually two different simple superdivision algebras, which is C or Clifford with one generator, and we actually don't know how to deal with the general case. But suppose all of the objects have just are like in the bosonic case, there's an endomorphism algebra is C, all simple objects. Then actually one can go through the same construction and derive zero construction, and then get a state sum model which depends on the spin structure and the sign factor given by the Stuka cycle, well, again, by the same fermionic integral, where the beta tells you which two simplices are labeled by fermionic basis elements in the home space and which one by bosonic ones. In general, there's also this, in general, some of the edges are labeled by this weird objects whose endomorphism algebra is Clifford 1. And then there's also some sort of something else you need to do, so I don't really understand this completely. In any case, so this is also analogous, just flash this, so there's an analogous statement about bosonization in 2D has analogous in three dimensions. So in that case, there's a correspondence between three-dimensional fermionic phases and three-dimensional bosonic phases, but with a one-form Z2 symmetry. And moreover, not just a regular one-form, but a sort of an anomalous one-form Z2 symmetry. So symmetry is anomalous in the sense that the bosonic partition function is not invariant. And if you change, well, it depends on some two-form gauge field, but it's not invariant under changing the gauge field by sort of equivalent one. It's some anomaly like of this form. So, what am I going to say? Sorry? Yes, it's a background field. Yeah, so the bosonization, yeah, so, and there's some similar story in D dimensions, presumably, because there's some correspondence between fermionic phase and D dimensions and bosonic phases with anomalous D minus 2 form symmetry. That's actually a nice example where why D minus 2 form symmetries are, well, why higher form symmetries are useful things to think about, because they provide some candidates for bosonization, mainly in higher dimensions. Here is some open questions. So first of all, we'd like to fix that problem, how to construct fermionic state sum for any superfusion category, not just from restricted type. Now, I'm not sure what bosonization means in higher dimensions, because they're not every manifold is spin. So what exactly, how is that reflected in the bosonization? Now, the most interesting question probably is, why is there a spin statistics relation anyway? Is it true that in all dimensions, there's a spin statistics relation? These are some general theorem to that effect. And finally, well, a more applied question. Well, I would like to understand how to actually do the Dirac fermions better on the lattice, not just on the torus, but in general triangulated, you know, D-manifold. Presumably, the spin structure and its combinatorial avatar will come up there too. So it should be useful, I guess, for lattice gauge people. I'll stop here. Yes?
So I have a very low-brow question. Let's take your favorite speech in science theory, say U1-5.
Yeah.
What would you say here that you didn't know before?
Those theories are chiral, so they don't have state sum construction at all. So they have non-vanishing central charge. So I'm saying that...
I will ask you a question.
Yeah.
Take Zn, which needs a...
Yeah.
Which needs a spin structure.
Well, the actual question is how to actually compute the partition function of those Zn theories. So to define these Zn theories, they're really well defined. How to write an action? So these theories are best defined like in non-spin case, the best definition is using a sort of Wilson construction, right? When you have like element of the group for every cycle, for every edge of the triangulation. Okay, but in the, you're asking, okay, how do you actually compute the partition function in the spin case, how would it depend on spin structure enter? That gives an explicit formula for that. You're supposed to think about spin structure as some particular cycle on the lattice. And that cycle gives you an extra correction factor for every piece in the, well, the
O. Is this a new theory? So when people studied Zn germ science with Dirac Whitney term, the function of that term, and evaluated that, are you saying that this is a new term that can be added? Or is this a new term?
No, the question
term
is
that should be added.
So the question is how the Dirac-Whitney theory does not depend on spin structure. It's a purely bosonic theory.
Yes.
So the question is, what are fermionic analogs of digraph Whitney theories? So
they're straightforward fermionic analogs.
From what?
So for Zn, you can describe it as a U1 by G1, N ADD, and then add to it with K ADA, C and G, some papers.
Yeah, but it's not sort of, it's not a formulation, it's a continuum formulation.
Yeah, that's good enough.
Well, from some point of view, it is good enough.
So are you saying that this formulation misses some terms?
This formulation is inconvenient because we have a theory with only finite data, right? You don't need to have any issues of regularization or anything like that. It's just like, why would you want to construct something finite out of something which is infinite dimensional, like some path integral? You want to compute everything from just finite sums because everything is finite in the end. Doing like you saying that Zn is subgroup of U1 is like clearly an overkill. What is the direct construction, combinatorial construction of all the Hilbert spaces and all the partition functions? Well, that gives you this.
Something very simple. Maybe I work too hard again, too much data. Is there something, I use that formulation with U1, which is in your paper, am I going to miss something?
It's going to make it harder for you to compute anything because you have a path integral to do which has non-trivial dependence on spin structure. Computing it is not easy. On here, for example, I can explicitly have a combinatorial sum which gives me a number. Computing the partition function of the path integral is much harder because it's easy to write, say, it's e to the is dA, right? But we all know that you're actually computing, so in this formulation, for example, it's not even clear where would the spin structure enter, right? The action doesn't seem to depend on it, right? You just have to enter for the fact that the level is not quantized correctly, right? To get something purely bosonic. So how to actually evaluate to see the dependence on spin structure? That's tricky. Here's nothing tricky about it. Give me a spin structure and I give you explicit function.
I don't know. This is kind of like a lattice realization. It's a field theory. And also this lattice realization is already a RT fixed point, exact RT fixed point.
Yes.
And so exact RT fixed point may be useful. But there is another issue. I don't know whether there are certain spin transcendental field theory, whether they all admit this last realization or not. There's an issue.
But there's also an issue whether they were analyzed correctly or incorrectly.
That's another chart, yes, could be, yeah.
So there's another question of whether they were analyzed correctly or incorrectly. Is there another term that can be added or not?
So let me put it this way. I think it's probably known that there are certain spin transcendental theory, even center chart to zero. But you know, Michael has an example that to the boundary still not gappable. I think those maybe spin transcendental theory with zero center charts, but to the boundary is not gappable. Probably it's more difficult to realize this way.
Well, Nadia, I think the answer is this: there are some simple spin TQFTs or simple in quotes, which are just take transimons with some improperly quantized level, right? And you get something which depends on spin structure, but it's kind of hard to tell how, right? You need to do some computations which note one loop computations to actually detect the dependence on spin structure. But then it gives them a limited supply of spin dependent TQFTs or field theories in general. This gives you alternative construction, which does not rely on, you know, for example, it works for, I don't know, non-abelian groups, right? Non-abelian finite groups. And so it works for more general, it's more general construction. And what the advantage is also, you don't need to worry about any regularizations and doing any one loop computation, anything like that. It's completely combinatorial construction. They are rigorously defined. Yes.
I mean, there's an alternative finite construction if you have a finite group, which is you just sum over those Galois covering spaces with that finite group. Now,
yeah.
Now you have a cohomology class that's not, again, an ordinary cohomology. You have an extra Z2. But you can still define the theory that way. So. And you could compute the dependence on spin structure.
Okay, yeah. But it's probably the same thing.
Making a lattice.
But is it clear that it's the same thing?
Same thing as the lattice.
So there's the dense construction where it's only the continuum and sum over these gauge fields. They're all finite sums.
Correct. Yeah.
So you do finite sums and you lay some weight that he tells you how to compute. There's another one that you do. Is it obvious that they're the same? Or is it that Dan missed the term?
Well, I think my goal is just to say that, to understand how to, first of all, compare TQFTs, which are defined usually without any reference to lattice, and sort of lattice models which finite matter people study. So, and that's a step towards that. And a step which I haven't shown here and haven't worked out fully. It would like be nice to work out how to get from the state some model for the partition function, state some model for the Hilbert space and the wave functions. Right? But it's that part is straightforward. When you have the partition function, you can go down. Any state sum model clearly has some way to compute the Hilbert space as well. And get the commuting project of Hamiltonian, which gives this space of states as the ground space of ground states of some Hamiltonian. So that part is more straightforward. So that gives you a way to understand why some abstract TQFTs, and which classified by some homotopy theory, are also classified phases, at least in one direction. For every spin TQFT, you get a phase. That's the value. Because a phase, from a kind of meta point of view, is defined by a lattice Hamiltonian. That gives you a path to deriving that.
So in critical, so you said how to compute this Bordism group.
Yes.
Spin Bordism of BG in up to three. Do you know in four?
Even in three, it's still a conjecture. That computation. So for particular groups, the answer is known. For general groups, I cannot really describe. But if you look at literature, math literature, for particular groups like cyclic groups, I'm sure the computation to very high dimension, maybe tall dimensions. So, but just for some, it's not be easy reading. Because what mathematicians are interested in is a case where fix some nice class of groups, maybe abelian groups, and compute spin borders in all dimensions. Well, I'm more interested in the case when, you know, pretty generic group, but low dimensions. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, for some, say, finite abelian groups, you can find examples or computations in pretty much all dimensions.
So let's play around again, and maybe we can beat that 10 past 3 because I'm time for coffee. Okay.